Kakao is a leading audio product company using artificial intelligence to change the way sound gets made. To learn more, we are pleased to welcome Jonathan Bailey to the show. Jonathan is the Chief Technology Officer of iZotope, a company that makes innovative audio products and is best known for their solutions for audio professionals. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My partner is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 10 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. In our almost three complete seasons of Creative Next, we've taken quite a journey through different areas of creative endeavor and expression. In this season alone, we've explored design, architecture, videography, and fine art. What most of the things we've covered here have in common is that they are primarily visual. They involve creating things that are consumed with our eyes, with our sense of vision. And we've learned about remarkable advances in fields such as computer vision, where machines are now adept at observing the physical world, converting it into machine-readable data, and processing that data to enable powerful and even intelligent applications. Well, let's give our eyes a break and get our ears working. I mean, heck, Creative Next is an audio show. We publish as a podcast, an explicitly audio medium. Understanding the future of audio, both the recording and editing, is important to what we might be doing in future seasons. Especially our expert editor, Michael Hermes, who already relies on software to deliver each episode to you and would surely benefit from new and smarter toys that make his job easier and better. So, not only are music and sound design part of the panoply of creative endeavors that this show is chartered to explore, they are essential to how we actually make the show and bring it to you. So, let's get smarter about the present and future of these technologies and start to learn about how they might directly affect us. To start this journey into sound and music, we welcome Jonathan Bailey to the show. Jonathan is the Chief Technology Officer at iZotope, a company that makes innovative audio products and is best known for their solutions for audio professionals. Let's start with some framing in the past of audio software and learn about iZotope's product, Neutron. Neutron is mixing software, which means that it helps the audio engineer to bring together different music, sounds, or other forms of audio into a cohesive and compelling whole from the comfort of a computer workstation.
Of course, this is during a whole moment in history where more and more people have access to personal computers. Pro Tools had really established itself as a really viable alternative to making music, making records, as opposed to going into, you know, a professional recording studio and having to spend tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, et cetera, et cetera. What they really latched onto was the fact that the audio industry, or particularly the music technology industry at that point in time, was doing great work at sort of making the process or the opportunity to record available to people, but was still using kind of the old paradigms from that go all the way back to, you know, analog mixing desks, right? You know, if you look at Pro Tools even today, the design paradigm is based on a mixing board. Most of the processors that are available are, you know, kind of direct emulations or representations of physical audio processing equipment. Most people use Neutron in an audio workstation environment such as Pro Tools. And Neutron functions as a plugin in that environment. Neutron itself, the data that we get doesn't consist of much more than parameter settings from the various user interface controls that exist in our user interface design, and then audio data that is streamed through the plugin from the underlying audio workstation host. We don't have much context other than that. We might be able to, depending on the environment we're in, we can pick up the name of the track that instance of Neutron was placed on. Maybe there's a little bit more context, but other than a kind of stream of audio bits, which is just a sequence of values between 0 and 1, we don't have a lot of context for what the user is trying to do, even what the content is they're trying to work on. But when we know more about that, when we know what the underlying content is from the signal that we're working with, what the user's intent is, and we apply some of our own opinions or points of view or understanding of the kind of the pedagogy of mixing or best practices from mixing, we can create a more powerful experience and outcome for that user. So a concrete example of that would be we have technology in Neutron that allows us to be able to, using a very similar technique to that which is used in facial recognition software, determine what the underlying instrument is that the user is working with if they're in a music production setting. So, you know, we can tell if the track that they're working on is a vocal or a, you know, bass guitar or a drum set. And then accordingly, we can kind of steer the user experience in a particular direction based on our understanding of that content. So that's for us what we're always kind of pushing for when we think of intelligent audio processing. We don't want to just kind of leave the bar at working on a bunch of zeros and ones and a kind of dumb processing of that signal. The more we know about the content the user is working with, the more powerful a solution we think we can provide.
Like other smartware we've learned about on Creative Next, it is essential that Neutron be able to read and interpret data, converting the ones and zeros, as Jonathan mentioned, into forms that enable the machine to be assistive in the audio mixing process, thus augmenting the human's work most effectively. Let's continue to hear a little more about the underlying technology.
Yeah, so there's a machine learning algorithm. There's a neural network, essentially a deep neural network that we have. So as part of our development, we trained a neural network to be able to take as its input a stream of audio and output a label, basically, or a class. And so the architecture of this type of neural network is called a classifier. And this comes directly from the world of image processing. In fact, a lot of our innovations at iZotope, we steal somewhat shamelessly from advances in image and video processing and apply them as we can to audio. And then, of course, it expand upon those and evolve those and revolutionize those where we can. So that's essentially how it works. So we have, at the end of the day, we have a stream of audio coming into the product and a stream of audio leaving the product. And our job is to process that audio to make it sound better or make it sound more like the user wants us to. But as a side process, we'll take that audio and pipe that through this neural network. And that's essentially, doing a kind of complicated form of pattern recognition to determine if that stream of content looks more like a guitar or a bass or a vocal. And so based on that, that spits out a label. And then that label is kind of pulled into our mixing engine. And that kind of steers the processing. And what it really does is it steers some of the setup for the user. So for this type of product is used more by a sort of a more knowledgeable or professional customer. So we have to thread a needle that's somewhat delicate between offering kind of assistance to that user, but not automating away too much of what they want to do themselves. So the design paradigm we've settled on is this assistive technology. So the user has to engage this feature directly. And then after they do, we stream some audio through the product. And then we say, okay, we think we've decided that this is a vocal. And so based on the fact that this is a vocal, here's kind of a chain of processing we would recommend, EQ settings we would recommend. Maybe we enable the de-esser to take care of any, sibilant sounds. We'll enable a compressor with some defaults that would be applicable for not just vocals, but we can also extract some acoustic features from the signal and apply some, you kind of steer the processing accordingly. But that's the fundamentals of how it works.
Last episode, Mario Klingemann alluded to the way that visual technologies and solutions are some of the early movers in AI. Some of those advances are impacting how machines work with audio as well. In innovation, cross-pollination between fields and industries is a powerful accelerant to how advances and leapfrogs happen. Let's learn about some of the granular functions of another iZotope product called RX7, audio repair software that helps production engineers to clean up their sound.
The specific feature that you're referring to in RX7 is called music rebalance. And that's kind of the third generation for us of a set of techniques that we started to develop a few years ago, which are essentially, as exactly as you described, kind of unmixing, or the technical term in, in the machine learning world would be source separation. So we have a mixture of two sources and we're attempting, or two or more sources, and we're attempting to separate them. The very first feature that we implemented along those lines was a feature that came out in RX6, the prior version of RX, called de-Russell. And the problem that we were trying to solve there, it's not really a problem that shows so much in music production, shows up so much in music production, but RX is used by two types of customers. It's used by music producers, but it's also very, very popular and kind of ubiquitous in the world of audio for post. So that's people who are doing dialogue or sound for film and television. It's an industry standard in that world. Our customers were asking us to help them solve the problem of lavalier microphone rustle. So lav mics, of course, are those little lapel mics that you might pin on someone for a, you know, if you and I were meeting face to face and this were on camera, you might put a lapel mic on me. You don't want to stick a huge microphone in front of the person's face, or, you know, don't want to use a boom microphone. So those lavalier mics are very handy in that they're small and they, you know, they're relatively easy to conceal, but they have the downside that if they're not perfectly positioned, the capsule can rub on clothing, particularly if the speaker is a very animated speaker, and you can get all of this rustle noise from the clothing. That tends to be highly correlative with this speech content, i.e. the noise happens at the same time the person is talking. And it also tends to be very high bandwidth in terms of frequency, which means it's really hard to filter that out using an EQ or something like that. And you can certainly imagine if you have something like 40-minute long or hour-long interview with somebody, you know, having to go through and attempt even trying your best to filter that rustle noise out, which you're never going to get at all, over that duration of an audio file is a real pain for someone who's doing the dialogue editing. So we had an idea that it might be possible to use machine learning to solve this problem, and that's where de-Russell came from.
Not all automation removes or improves our work. Some of it does things that were not possible before, such as in this example. The lav mic is a ubiquitous audio tool, but it does run the risk of quality degradation. Thanks to AI-enabled software like RX7, the lav can be used more frequently when quality takes precedence over environmental usability. Let's hear more about how they make RX7, as well as how their post-production software, Ozone, works.
We look at a spectral representation of the audio. So rather than looking at the audio in the time domain or like a waveform display, so that would be the sort of jagged display of sound pressure levels that everyone is used to seeing from, you know, iTunes or SoundCloud or whatever, right? This kind of jagged line. We convert that representation in the frequency domain. So that's more like, imagine you're looking at the audio content like it's across a piano keyboard. You know, what notes or what frequency content are we looking at here? So we can almost treat that representation like an image. And at each portion of that spectral representation, we can attempt to make a decision. Is this, for example, is this voice or not voice? And then based on that, we can subtract out, if we determine that certain sections of that audio file are voice, we can subtract out the rest of that audio in the frequency domain and then convert that back to the time domain so that that can be played or mixed or modified or whatever. But it's all the same basic approach, essentially. So we've trained a neural network to be able to make kind of point-to-point decisions, but both in time and in frequency in the audio file as to what our best guess for the content is at that particular location. And then we use some spectral math to actually do the separation itself. When we first came up with the idea for this musical source separation, I mean, that was a little bit, as you probably know, of a kind of holy grail problem to try to solve. You know, the audio nerds would call that like unbaking a cake, right? And we sort of thought that that wasn't really possible. You know, once you mix the eggs and the flour and, you know, something chemically happens and you can't separate it. And there's certainly a lot of progress we need to make on this. You know, it's kind of early days in terms of being able to do this, but this is an area where iZotope has been investing pretty heavily in machine learning research over the past couple of years, not instead of our investments in signal processing, but as a new tool, as kind of a complement to what we can do with signal processing. And we're really, at this point, I think pretty convinced that machine learning can unlock solutions to problems that really just seemed unsolvable before. And it's also pretty early days right now. You know, I mean, there's a lot of buzz in the world of technology overall, and I think probably a lot of snake oil and misunderstanding of what machine learning really is capable of. But on the other hand, you know, it is a pretty spectacularly powerful technology and set of techniques that we can use in, you know, in the world of music and audio. And I think it's early days now for how we can apply that. And I'm particularly excited to see where this goes. That, you know, the maturity curve is very, very steep right now. There's a lot of new stuff that's happening all the time. So tech that even, you know, was kind of state of the art just a couple of years ago is, you know, sort of becoming passe and being usurped and improved upon nowadays.
What about content generation? Are interesting things happening with audio generation similar to what we've been learning about with words and images?
iZotope takes a lot of inspiration from what's happening more broadly in the world. If you look at what we've used neural networks for at iZotope, we've used them to label or classify or identify content. And then that was where we started. And now we're able to use them to process audio or to modify content. The sort of next horizon for both the world at large, but definitely for audio, is how can we use neural networks to generate content? If you look into the research community, you can see some pretty interesting and exciting examples of neural networks that can, for example, take an image that has part of the content in the image literally cropped out or cut out and resynthesize what that content might be. Or take a semantic descriptor, so kind of do the opposite of what our Neutron product does. So Neutron takes a bass sound in and outputs a base label. That's what its neural network does, right? Identify the content as base. Well, there are neural network architectures that can do the reverse. So you can say, okay, give me a buzzy, warm sounding bass. That neural network will output the audio content for that, right? So there's some kind of early research around content generation that's very, very, very interesting to us. I think one of your questions was around algorithmic composition or will neural networks be used to create music in the future? And that's already happening. You know, it's early days for that, but there's a company that we're pretty friendly with called Amper Music. They are doing precisely that. They are using machine learning to generate music. They're doing it for more commercial applications, I'll say. So audio cues for TV commercials or for corporate videos, that kind of thing. You know, they're not yet trying to compete for a spot on the top 40 playlist, but the musical results that are being created are more and more sophisticated and sound better and better and more kind of believable. So that's really exciting to me, is to see where that goes. You know, for our customers that we talked about, there are a whole bunch of interesting potential applications. You know, accompaniment. You know, I play my guitar, and can we come up with a backing track for that guitar recording? Additional enhancements of this, the sounds that you've recorded. You know, if you can imagine stacking harmonies or something like that. There's a million different use cases that we can think of for these kinds of things. But you know, it's early days in terms of the foundational research, but we're interested in where we can kind of go past identifying content and processing content to generation of content. That's kind of the next horizon for us.
Consistent with other trends we're observing in creative automation, iZotope is leaning into making tools for amateur creators as well as professionals. Let's learn more.
We have a new product line that we launched a couple of years ago, and we're kind of slowly building up as a company. We released our first consumer electronics product, physical hardware product. It's called Spire Studio. The best analogy I like to use for it is, it's like, imagine if someone made a GoPro for musicians. So it's a wireless, battery-powered, very high-quality, portable recording appliance. It's really easy to use. You push one button, you can start recording. It's got a microphone on it, or you can use your own microphone. There are companion apps that run on both iOS and on Android that you can use for more complicated processing steps or workflow stages. But the kind of basic premise is, we're trying to address the market of musicians, and not necessarily people who are audio engineers or music producers, but for the musician who wants to record but doesn't want to invest heavily in Pro Tools and a bunch of microphones and a whole bunch of gear and ascend that learning curve.
In making this show, we decided to record everything in the studio environment, whether that be at our homes with affordable hardware made by companies like Rode and Blue, or at the PRX Podcast Garage Studios in Alston, Massachusetts, where we're sitting today. The extra infrastructure and lack of environmental control for remote recording is a complicating factor we didn't want to manage, and thus we do all of our interviews remotely from these locations. While we think of digital music, for example, as something solely happening on a computer, the reality of audio is that it is often a synthesis of sounds captured physically and things generated or altered digitally. The entire continuum of the process of making great sound, for a company like iZotope, requires thoughtful consideration. Artificial intelligence doesn't work in isolation, and providing the best possible tools requires at least a mindfulness, or if not involvement, across all of it. So what does Jonathan see as the future of AI and audio?
There's probably two answers I would give to that question. So there's a macro trend, which is actually bigger than sort of machine learning or AI, which is for the professional working in audio, you know, the last 50, 60, 70 plus years has been a transition away from the technical problem domain to the creative problem domain. And I'll describe what that means. So in the 1950s or 1960s, if you wanted to make a recording, you literally had to be an engineer, right? The sort of, there weren't the products available to be able to record and mix music unless you knew how to solder. You might have to make your own mixing board. You would have to repair your own microphones. You had to understand complicated electronic signal routing and stuff like that. If you cut, you know, 30 years in the future, now we've got Pro Tools, right? And so rather than having to invest $1 million or $250,000 in all of the gear and the knowledge and expertise for a recording studio, you can now do that on your desktop. And so what that meant was people can spend more of their time thinking about aesthetic decisions in music production, like how many, you know, what do I want the harmony to sound like for the lead vocal on this song, and not, you know, how do I reduce the room tone in my recording or get the guitar and the vocal to not clash with each other, you know, that kind of problem domain. So that's a macro trend that we see overall, which I definitely think is being accelerated by machine learning and the assistive technology that we're creating. One question I get a lot is kind of related to your question is, you know, is what we're trying to do essentially to put engineers, you know, audio engineers out of business? The answer to that is, of course not. You know, we're a company full of audio engineers ourselves. But what we are interested in doing is taking care of the technical work that's not really differentiated or valuable that engineers have to deal with on every day of their lives. To the extent that we can automate as much or all of that away as possible, we're really interested in that, and that's what we're trying to do. So we, you know, we can really see a future where the audio engineer sits down, they've made a recording, it's denoised, it's cleaned up, everything kind of works well together, and they can start kind of getting creative, you know, just painting with colors rather than having to fix a bunch of problems in the content that they're producing. That's the world that we're trying to push those people towards.
They can start getting creative. AI-enabled tools are already exceptional at removing the tedium from our jobs. Whether that be cutting something out of an image, or processing huge amounts of data, or automagically making poor audio sound good, the hard, manual, time-consuming bits are being absorbed by our machines. For audio engineers, just like writers and designers and artists, the emphasis will continue to shift from technical skills to storytelling, creative direction, and ingenuity. As so many of us are paid by the hour, by the time we spend, as opposed to the impact we produce, there will need to be a shift in how we are being compensated for these changes to work in some more systematic way. So, how will all of this impact the future training of audio professionals?
I think that current trends around machine learning and AI will open up recording and music, you know, digital music creation to a class of customers for whom it wasn't available before. You know, by being able to encode some of the best practices and some of the learning that only an audio engineer would have into kind of like your virtual audio engineer buddy, now people can create recordings that sound good. You know, they'll sound good enough that they could be you know, uploaded directly to Spotify or SoundCloud or whatever. I'm a little skeptical that machine learning technologies should be used to teach the fundamentals. An analogy I would draw is, you know, Picasso knew how to draw very realistically before he started to make kind of abstract representations of figures. And so I tend to maybe be a little bit more conservative in terms of the musical pedagogy when it comes to the use of these kind of powerful tools to automate or assist away a lot of this, these fundamentals. But I do think that it won't be enough for someone to come out of, say, an audio engineering program without a more creative skill set, is what I'll call it. You know, without a way to kind of differentiate, not just to sort of do the cleanup work or the highly technical work anymore. I do think a lot of that is going to be automated away through technology. But I think for people who can evolve beyond that and can develop a set of, you know, creative skills and kind of their own sound and a point of view and a personality, I always think there will be opportunities for those people. But I think that will be kind of the challenge for both the schools and for the professionals that come out of those schools wanting to work in audio, that they will have to increasingly create, you know, their own voice and aesthetic, because that's sort of where the problems that need to be solved will live. There will be less so in the technical domain.
As we hear about one creative profession after another moving in this same direction, I wonder if different specialties will diffuse into broader roles. Will the number of people specializing in just, say, music or audio become incredibly few, while the education about things like style and composition are just one part of a more comprehensive form of creative training? So, will filmmakers have more sound and audio creative direction in their work, as they have less about things such as the technical aspects of cameras or the finer points of editing and post? Sticking with film for a moment, will the hundreds of roles required to make a major motion picture slowly dissolve into increasingly less? That the combination of automation at the bottom and broader knowledge and training at the top pushes out all but the most specialized and exceptional experts at more granular components of larger creations? It certainly seems how this is all heading. To finish, does Jonathan think all of this will disenfranchise humans from their jobs and careers?
Yeah, I probably somewhat boringly and hopefully somewhat predictably, as someone who, you know, works with a team of people thinking about this all day long, I fall somewhere in the middle. I do not share the sort of dystopian concerns that the machines are going to take over and you know, shortly rule the show, and that, you know, the human race will become kind of subservient to the algorithms. It's as someone, as a team that works with ML all day long, you know, we're just scratching the surface of what is even possible to do in terms of personalizing the experience to a specific user, in terms of continuing to enhance our algorithms in response to real world data. So we have a very long way to go between sort of for us personally, from where we are to, you know, the robots are generating our code and our products for us, right? It's very difficult for me to see the sort of near-term path to anything like that. On the flip side, I do think there's a lot of hype around machine learning, and sometimes a sort of a lack of understanding of what it can do and what it can't do and where it can be used and where it can't. It's easy to see that, you know, neural networks will solve certain kinds of problems for us, but they're maybe not appropriate for other kinds of problems. At the end of the day, someone still needs to train them. You know, you have a person that has a point of view that is guiding and steering the neural network. Now, there are new network architectures where a neural network can train another neural network, and those are pretty interesting, but there's still someone behind that, right? So there, you know, currently and for the foreseeable future, there's going to be kind of a guiding hand who's sort of steering and curating what these things are capable of. And it's, I just don't see that human aspect of it being replaced anytime soon.
Thanks again to our guest, Jonathan Bailey. So, John, how did our interview with Jonathan impact your thinking about the work we are doing with Creative Next?
Well, I felt like Jonathan really gave us some concrete examples of AI being used as augmentation for, you know, an area of creativity, you know, music or sound design or what have you, that is really advancing quite quickly, in at least insofar as in comparison to some of the design tools where we're sort of just starting to use AI in a more substantial fashion. I always feel like I'm only speaking for myself here, but I always feel like the tools for audio seem to be a little bit ahead of the design tools when it comes to specifically incorporating machine learning and artificial intelligence. I'm not sure why that's the case, but it feels like there are some very specific and incredible production tools already available and being used by people in their day-to-day work that are leveraging things that, honestly, like 15 years ago, I would have never dreamed this stuff was possible.
Wow.
It's really, to me, having started in with analog reel-to-reel tape and then watching the progression to digital recording with Pro Tools in the studio, to now it's, you can do it on your laptop, basically. Like the amount of power and sort of the reduction of budget required to do this stuff is incredible. It's probably cheaper now to do this stuff than it was when it was analog.
Yeah.
So to me, listening to Jonathan really gave me some insight into the kinds of progress we can expect in other creative fields, in just a few years, because I can already see it taking shape in audio. And I'm sure other fields are advancing as well, but those are the ones I have a lot of personal interest in.
Yeah, and I want to remind our listeners too that you are very experienced and skilled in music and audio. After college, you were a professional jazz musician, and you've continued doing electronic music in your free time up until today. So this is definitely a sweet spot for you as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's a strange place to be, to watch the digitization of this industry in all respects. Whether it's, digital distribution of music, streaming, there's been so much change in the music industry and in audio production over the, 20 plus years of my professional career. It's really mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. For me, answering the same question, I mean, I was surprised to learn the degree to which computer vision and AI around visual creativity are trickling down into all of these other applications. So Mario, of course, indirectly alluded to this as well, but I'm starting to see some shapes here around the more macro structure of these technologies coming together that's really enriching my understanding of the future of creative work and what we're doing here on the show. So what did Jonathan say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you?
So I thought Jonathan's description of the origins of that vocal separation capability in RX7 was particularly fascinating to me, because the origin, the start of it, is this sort of vexing problem about, the lavalier mics and how do you just avoid that shushing sound that happens when the lavalier brushes against your clothing and you're trying to get that out of the recording afterwards. And so that's the genesis of this amazing piece of, AI augmented software where you can basically clip out the vocal track, of any piece of music that you want. So if you have a favorite pop song or something like that, and you want to do a remix, you just select the vocal and get rid of the instruments underneath, and lo and behold, you have the vocal track. Yeah. It's not always perfect, but it's probably going to get there. And it's for me, the understanding where that came from and sort of the steps involved in getting there was really eye-opening, because something as sort of simple as cleaning up, the sound for a recording and the lavalier noise results in, down the road, this sort of amazing, at least to me, this amazing ability to separate out voice from anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, what was the biggest surprise to me is probably common knowledge to you. This audio is not an area that I have expertise in. But, you know, Jonathan talked about how 50 years ago, to be an audio engineer, you needed to know how to solder. To solder. I mean, that means melting and combining metals. That blows my mind. I mean, now it's all computers. You know, even the audio capture for the most part is done by a computer. So I had no idea that audio engineering was such a physical activity in the past in general, much less that it required soldering. That continues to blow my mind. It doesn't even make sense in a certain way how soldering would be related to audio engineering.
Yeah, you know, I'm not as steeped in the history as much as Jonathan is, but I could see, you know, being part of a music studio, and you should see these mixing boards. They were like, they look like the control panel for air traffic control, right? So there's these huge mixing boards that I could see. Each piece is, you know, this piece of metal that with tons of wiring beneath it. And I could imagine, you know, you're just missing channels because things are getting blown or because you have to unplug something and you pull it too hard and the wiring comes apart. So I don't know that that's what he was referring to, but they had these, even in my early days, I was putting together speakers, right? Soldering stuff. I mean, that's how I learned to solder, is because I wanted to build music equipment.
I see.
So I don't know specifically what he was referring to, but I remember burning lots of things trying to learn how to solder.
That's remarkable. It's really a different time. So what did you learn from Jonathan that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
As you can probably tell, I'm pretty excited about the AI-driven software tools that iZotope has on the market right now. They have a new version of Ozone, which I'm really eager to get my hands on because it allows you to fix instruments in the mix, maybe raising them a little in the mix or reducing them depending on, you know, what your artistic choices are, without going back to the separate tracks. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. You've got this file, which in theory is sort of, you can adjust certain things and not others. And they're just making it possible for the mastering engineer to be able to change things that in the past you could not change.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, I mean, essentially a lot of their tools are doing this. So making it possible for you to do things that you always wanted to do, but had to really dig back into the original files to do them. I can think of tons of examples of that in design where, you know, you get to the end and you're like, wow, I wish I could just change this, you know, change the font on everything, but it's already printed, right?
Yeah.
That's the equivalent, right? Like it's already, you think it's done, but you can make these adjustments that you never could before. So for me, it's given me this impetus to not just look at, I mean, obviously wanting to look at more of the iZotope software, but to keep my eye out for more of this sort of magical software that I can use in the studio.
You know, John, given the Creative Next interview and being a member of the media, I wonder if you could get a free copy of the whole iZotope suite.
I want to support them. So, and I already have a copy, which I bought. So it's just going to be an upgrade. It's
fair enough. Fair enough. You know, now that we've had almost three complete seasons of the show, and as we near the end of this season on form, definite patterns are emerging for me. And now that I see these patterns, I'm trying to think about what they mean to the bigger picture, sort of extending them beyond sort of typically the focus of what we're doing from show to show. And learning that audio, like some of the other things we've covered on the show, is moving toward an environment where amateurs will be able to produce like a professional, sort of cements for me that trend will likely exist across most, if not all, of the various creative disciplines. Realizing that, I want to learn about just how far that goes in the specific cases, but then seeing that and understanding it, start to imagine the larger social implications of all of this. So each episode, we finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, If future audio software allowed you to collaborate with any virtual musician, which musician would you choose? Think about that for yourself and feel free to tweet at us about it at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is a proud member of Civil, a community-owned platform for independent journalism. Learn more at civil.co, that's civil.co. We are sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare, whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation. A new kind of museum, they believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission? Bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most. Healthcare, education, and public service to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is. That's biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter at GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish articles to extend and build upon these episodes. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at dniemeyer, and my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. Thanks to our guest Jonathan Bailey, whom you can connect with on LinkedIn. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. That's it for Creative Next Season 3, Episode 10. But here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
All you need to know to create unique and professional music tailored to your content are three things: the style of music you want to create, the mood you want to convey, and the length of your piece of music. If that's all you know, in a matter of seconds, you'll make something brand new.